You just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over.
This was me being a hustler.
The only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is to try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
Welcome to Ground Zero Growth with your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbaud.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ground Zero Growth. I'm joined today with my guest, Alex Walker, owner of Green Desk Grant Writing. We are off to a fantastic start. Mompreneur and coach. How are you doing, Alex?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. We're going to keep in the mistake because I find when I started off like that, it's just a great conversation from there.
Yeah, just get it out of the way. We're good.
So you, mompreneur, I hadn't heard that term before you, and I absolutely love that term. Did you coin that? Have you heard that before? Or where did come from?
Probably from the Integrate Her KC world of working with a bunch of mompreneurs, and just that's what you become, especially when you have, you know, kids, especially with summer school right now and being out of school. You become the ultimate hybrid of a mom and an entrepreneur.
So tell me about that. How do you kind of walk that line? Because I was thinking about that. Maybe it's because I knew secretly I was gonna interview you, but I was also thinking about it because an interview I'm gonna do after this is a mother who owns a business and it's essentially a woman ran business, and it's an interesting thing to me because I've seen mothers in business, but it seems like I don't even know how to explain it. It helped me, but it seems like it's a difficult thing to kind of walk. It shouldn't be, but sometimes it kind of is. Like sometimes you have women that are in the business, but it almost seems like they're more business than at home, and maybe vice versa at times. So it's obviously a difficult balance. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with all the factors that go into being a mom, whether it's childcare or if you're a single mom looking at housing, with being an entrepreneur, that can be a difficult line to walk too. But really, you know, one day my kid actually asked me, "Mom, you know, Dad said he was taking PTO. Are you going to take PTO? And I was like, "Well, bud, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I'm driving you around. You know, unfortunately, I don't have to take PTO to do that. But that does mean when, you know, you're home or after you go to bed, I'm up working and doing my thing." So, you know, it's a tough line to walk, but at the same time, I can be room mom. If I want to be room mom for their holiday parties, I can do field day at the end of the year and things like that, or be their dead mom for Cub Scouts. But, you know, it also means that mom might be working in the evening when everybody's home, and that's fine. You know, they've kind of learned that groove the last few years, which has been pretty cool.
So how would you say it's been culturally? So the context for me thinking, I was talking to, so I've got a little 4-year-old. I think we've talked about that a little bit. And when at being a dadpreneur, I guess, when she was really young and it was just me, I remember taking phone calls with her. And, you know, sometimes she'd be crying and sometimes the client would even, "Oh my gosh, that's so cute. You know, how old's your daughter?" Blah, 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 which was great, right? Because the alternative is, "Oh my gosh, I can't hear you over the screaming child."
Right.
And I was relaying that in a business meeting I was in with other entrepreneurs, and an older woman was like, "Wow, what a world we live in." And the moment I hear something like that, I'm like fascinated. Like, what world did you live in? And she described a world that I can't even comprehend, frankly, where she was like, the notion that you were a woman with a job at all was already like you were fighting an uphill battle. But the fact that you had a child, she's like, you basically had to hide the fact that you were pregnant and then play off like nothing had happened in a way that the environment you were in didn't doubt at any point that you were capable of fulfilling the task. And that whole concept to me is atrocious. So just to think of, you know, that's a culture that we hopefully at least to some degree came out of.
Not really.
that's what I'm asking. Like, what have you, tell me about it. Culturally, how has that been for you?
Culturally, to the extent, no, honestly, we haven't come fully out of that. What is nice is if I am working with other mompreneurs, they'll get it and that'll be okay. But there's not that many out there. And also, even, you know, myself or another business owner, you still want the five-star, high-class service that you're expecting when you pay your money. And that's true of any client. Sometimes it can be a little tough and overwhelming. The mom guilt, you know, is a little real in that those portions where you're like, okay, guys, you need to stay in your room while I'm on the phone or while I'm on Zoom. That seems to be the number one attraction because there's a camera there. So that's super cool for a kid. My kids are 6 and 12 now. So the boundaries are a little easier. But when my daughter was 3 and I was just getting started, she doesn't understand what a boundary is. She doesn't understand, like, mom's here. Why can't I be the star of whatever she's doing? And it seemed to be as soon as the camera came on, she wanted to be in my lap or there was a question about the tablet. So, you know, it can be tough. But overall, understanding that is definitely been a learning curve, and also trying to make sure to access childcare so I don't necessarily have those moments has been critical. When I didn't have childcare, when we lost childcare, like right as I was getting started, it actually caused me to almost shut my business down because I couldn't split that time that I needed. I couldn't focus when I needed to focus. And, being a grant writer, being a fundraiser, it's a lot of hard brain work or high level brain work. Stuffing envelopes, that can be like a lower level brain work. But when you're trying to artfully describe someone's mission and their fabric of their company or their nonprofit, you need to have your brain fully functioning on what you're doing. And that's kind of hard when you have a 3-year-old on deck. So that's my spiel about that piece.
No, and I have such admiration for, I've kind of jumped us into the deep end here, I suppose, but that okay. Sometimes what happens, I guess. My wife and I, I ended up having to get an office specifically because of those moments that you're talking about, where it's like Zoom, the number one attraction, right? The parents there, they're available. And it's also kind of the number one that, like, you can get the kiddo involved. So we're kind of a remote first workforce. So it's not that uncommon that in our meeting, the team's kiddos will run up and kind of be a part of it. But even then, being in the other person's shoes, which I have been in, you're not engaged the same way. It's not possible to be engaged the same way, right? It's like I'm trying to listen to this week's objectives while simultaneously juggle this toddler that might as well be a monkey up and around. So So we had to get an office just so I could kind of like, it was agreed upon group thing where I could step out to, and then it works perfectly because I can trust, you know, my daughter's home with mom and in a great environment, and that's what she's working on, so I can stay focused and fully engaged here. But that, like, how have you navigated that? Because that's a, that's a luxury I guess, really.
Well, and it was a luxury that I had at first. I was actually part of an all-woman co-working group, and then a gender minority co-working group. But unfortunately, both of those entities shut down because of the mompreneur struggle of balancing not only childcare and, life of being a business owner, but also rent on both ends for that entrepreneur that was running those businesses. So it was really tough, because you're also looking for that sense of community when you're a mompreneur too. And so those things can kind of pile up on you. But what I've found is that, yes, childcare, big thing. It's a tough thing in Kansas City because during COVID, 250 childcare centers actually closed and didn't reopen. So it's a struggle across the metro. But childcare is a big thing. Also, something that's been really lonely for myself and mompreneurs like me is finding a community. So finding different pockets to be in community with has been really important for that journey too. And, you know, sometimes you just end up having to step out to a Starbucks to get the quiet that you need when the kids are home, and especially now that they're older.
Can you describe this organization to me you were talking about that shut down? Because for some reason I've got in my head this vision of like a beautiful bunch of moms working together, kind of watching the kids while working, while stepping into the next room for a Zoom if they had to.
Yeah, it really was, because I even had like my kiddo, I think he was 10 or 9 at the time, loved going there. It was a spot in the West Bottoms, so it had all the old like factory brick and the hardwood and desks, and it was beautiful. Loved it so much, and had all of, you know, we had coffee and tarot sometimes. We had when there was a lot of election stuff going on, we, wrote letters to Congress people. There was like little micro like community type events, as well as that co-working and that camaraderie and, you know, spots where you could, you know, take calls or do your Zooms and things like that. So it was really fantastic. It just, like I said, the financial stability of it with being a mompreneur just wasn't sustainable, and we tried to keep the community going, but it was just an uphill battle with at the time raising rent prices in downtown Kansas City. That was tough, but would I love to have it going again? Oh yeah. Of the many my friend calls it multi potentialite things that I would love to do is to start a co-working space like that again.
That sounds like an amazing organization.
Yeah, they were fantastic.
Speaking of amazing organizations, let's talk about Green Desk Grant Writing. So what is it you're doing now? I mean, it's kind of a lot of it is in the name, but can you give a little bit more detail about what it is your organization is focused on, how long you've been involved in it, and where's it going, and what are you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe taking it back a little bit helps kind of frame it in. But I've been in the nonprofit space for the last 15 years, whether it's been grant writing like it sounds, or it's been relationship building or volunteer recruitment or strategic planning, capital campaigns, all the things. Basically, Green Desk Grant Writing was my way of Stepping out on my own and using all of my tools of my toolbox that I've accumulated over the last 15 years. Because what I was finding was I would be a chief development officer somewhere. I would work as a, at a foundation somewhere, but they'd only want to use like, a subsection of my skill set. I wanted to have access to my full template of skills. And so being an entrepreneur allows me to do that. So Green Desk Grant Writing allows me to not only help write, but build those relationships with funders, be able to search for grants. I like to find the grants that are off the beaten path that not a lot of people are applying for, as well as capital campaigns, brick and mortar spaces that actually, that are the physical things that people think of when their dreams come true. And, just general fundraising and strategic planning and helping nonprofits and small businesses realize their bigger vision with funding. I guess how long have I been doing this? 3 years this June. I've been out on my own doing my own thing, and I've loved it. In the last 3 years, I've gotten over $22 million in funding for small businesses and nonprofits, and including the last year was $7 million year. So it's been pretty exciting.
That's very exciting. It's a fascinating thing too. It's something I don't have a ton of exposure to, but I was in a committee once that helped kind of designate which foundations a grant or a set of grant money was going to go to, and it was great to see the like depth and breadth of care that went into it.
Yeah.
And consideration, and every grant applicant was reviewed rather thoroughly. And to your point about having an art in grant writing, there were definitely different types of grants for sure. And the applicants were kind of all over the space. And we had a very clear set of criteria, fortunately, on our end, that it was like, look, this is the criteria we're reviewing the grants on, and this is specifically what we're looking for. But it was kind of fascinating to see that the extent of detail that some folks took and the extent of detail that some folks maybe could have stood to have taken. And if you miss out on that one line, right, that one thing that's like, because I think the criteria was public, although I can't fully remember all the details. But if you miss out on that one piece of criteria, right, then as one reviewing an application, it's like we have this puzzle, but we're missing a very significant piece. And we have another person that has filled out the puzzle beautifully. And it's really disappointing because it's like yours, your foundation, your organization may well deserve and do great things with the money, but we're missing a very significant piece of the puzzle that this other person hasn't.
Yeah, it can be real tough. That's my number one, well, number two maybe rule is to actually follow the directions and fill all the things out. Make sure that you've answered all of the questions and all of their parts. It's, what we learned in testing when we were in school, right? That's the same thing with grant, filling out a grant proposal, just making sure you answer the question in all of its parts.
But my
number one rule though is making sure that you're qualified for the grant before you start putting pen to paper.
Yeah, it was fun being on the committee too, because obviously as people we have bias, and collectively we were kind of able to weed out that bias, I'd say, or at least a decent chunk of it. So it was a pretty good good opportunity for that. So all right, so now that we've got what you're doing currently, let's kind of rewind the clock, so to speak. So I like to start at kind of the high school period, because this in my mind is when we're developing to a point to where you know, parents, friends, family are kind of starting to, you know, what is it? What is it you want to do? What are you going to start to make money doing? What's your calling? What's your dream? What's your career? And then we also have a scenario where people are kind of telling us, right? There we go. People are kind of telling us. It's like, well, you know, you can't go out and be a magician. There's only a few people that make money being a magician or an actor or an actress. Maybe you should consider accountant or engineer or attorney. Not that there's anything wrong with those careers. They're fantastic ones. I think those are why they're regularly suggested. So what does Alex want to be? What does she think she wants to be? What's her dream? And what's kind of the thing being told to her?
So what's funny is that writing, it was what I wanted, truthfully, down in my bones. I wanted to be a writer. But my family very much so thought it was equivalent to being a magician. You'll never make money in that. Well, you know, fast forward that clock 15 years and here I am. Making money, yeah. But also making other people a lot of money writing. So that was
and
an interesting
better way to
piece.
Tell a story.
Yeah. Really following that dream, you need to be open to it, even if it's a funky path. And for me, when I was in high school, I wanted to be a writer. That was my big thing that I wanted. But, you know, I was talked out of it for a long time by you know, adults, and you know, so I said, okay, fine, like my second love is wildlife, because and doing you know, search and rescue. That's what I spent my time doing in New Mexico for the Boy Scouts of America, was saving people when they'd been attacked by animals or broken a leg or something like that. I would go and get them off the mountain and rescue them. So that became my love in college. And, you know, all this time, my grandmother
No, sorry. And you're on a roll here, but also, I mean, let's talk about rescuing Boy Scouts off the mountain that have been, I mean, you know, what hold up here? What adventure, right? Can you give me a story and kind of build a scene? Like, there had to have been a time where it was like, I don't know. I'm just envisioning, like, it's raining, it's storming, tornado warnings, and I'm getting the call. Sam broke his leg on the mountain. Help build that.
Yeah, one of the crazier ones was we went up to a mountain called Baldy, because there's no trees up there after a certain point. You get to the point where trees can't survive. You're so high up. This kiddo said, hey, or, you know, the report was that there was an asthma attack. Okay. And that the kid was having trouble breathing, and we said, okay, you know, we'll get up there, go help him, you know, get something to help him start breathing regularly again. So we get all the way up there. You know, and it's a couple hour drive into the mountain. And then at a certain point, you can't drive anymore. You have to hike up with a advanced life support pack, which is 90 pounds. And at the time, I was about 180 pounds. So about half my body weight, I'm carrying up the mountain to go take care of this kid with my team. And there's an adult that passes by and he goes, hey, you know, I told those kids to stop throwing those rocks. I guess you're going up to get one now. And I said, what? He said, yeah, that kid that hit his head on that rock, you're going up to get him, right? And we said, what? He said, yeah, that's what we called in. He was having trouble breathing because he had hit his head on a boulder. So now we've got a head injury. And instead of an asthma attack, so we hastened our team up.
Well, those are very different. So, when I hear asthma attack as a layman in low oxygen altitude, I think, okay, you know, probably the chief
bring
thing
them down.
Is we need one and an oxygen tank, probably, right? Mm-hmm. Something to kind of help give him a little bit more than what he's getting currently, probably.
Yeah, and a steroid treatment, you know, sure. Doesn't have to be a big deal, you know, get them lower in altitude, things like that. But a head injury is very different and requires a carry.
Right.
Team, which is a team of 12 people
and
on a carry basket.
And it's just you right now thinking you're going up with oxygen, right?
Me and two other people. So you've got a ranger that, you know, manages the map and your direction. You've got a fourth year medical student from KU that is, you know, in charge of the big drugs. And then you've got me, who's an EMT trained person who, you know, is the chief emergency person, also in charge of driving the vehicle. So, that's our team, is those three people. And so the game's very different at this point. So we keep going, hasten ourselves. And what's difficult is that at noon, there's always a storm over Baldy. So clouds are getting dark. We're starting to hear the rumbles. And part of why it's Baldy is not only do the trees not survive that high, but it's got a large density of metal ore in its top. So lightning likes to hit the top of it over and over again during these storms. Luckily, the kids, team had been hiking him down at this point. So they met us on the trail. And yeah, he had split his head open. And but unfortunately, because of the impending lightning storm, we're starting to see flashes now. We couldn't wait for the carry team. So we had to pack his head and get our butts down that mountain. But luckily he was okay. After we got him down, got him some stitches. Like, we didn't even have time to put stitches in, because we can put stitches in on the trail. Get it sterilized and put stitches in on the trail, and we would have been able to send him on his way. But with the lightning storm, we didn't even have time for that. We packed his head with gauze and got moving. And he was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have been doing that. And we're like, we just look at him. should not have been doing that, you know, jumping from rock to rock and slipped and hit his head.
Jumping from rock to rock.
Jumping from rock to rock hit his head. So that was nuts. And the whole thing took probably, you know, with driving back into base, I think we were out there a good 7 hours. So it was a full, you know, each of those shifts are 12 hours long. And I almost got toned out to go right back out on another call right after I hiked all the way up on Baldy and all the way back down. And my boss looks at me and goes, she is not going out on another call. He sent the second in command to go on the next one. So it was just, yeah,
That's wild.
Yeah, my eyes light up thinking about it. My heart lights up thinking about the time and the work that I did there. And it really helped me fall in love with nonprofits and things they do and the adventure that is to be had by folks, if they're given the outlet, even if they make a silly decision like jumping from rock to rock.
Well, and you and I had talked about this a little bit too. I was in the scouts for, I don't remember the full extent, a couple years at least, never quite. Eagle Scout. I had made the strategic decision as I got older to kind of pull back from it, more because the boys I was in with at the time, rather than leadership, which was actually fantastic. But it's I only had great experiences, truly, and hardening experiences that were fun too, you know. Actually one of the more difficult ones was there was a certain sleepover hike thing that we needed to go, and it was going to be under the stars, and the whole thing was like minimal that you brought, and they didn't let you do like formal blankets or anything like that. I think I was supposed to apparently buy space blankets from the local store, but I didn't do that. I blew my money on something else, and so trash bags was my blanket at the time, and the backpack was my pillow, and that's what I slept out on, which is just still really to me, even to this day, a wild concept, but absolutely nothing. Lived through it, a little chilly at the night, but whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm probably better for having gone through it.
Well, and it makes you think of, you know, and there's even some troops that purposely do campouts or do outings where they sleep overnight, like a homeless person would have to sleep out, to build that compassion towards people that are houseless. And I think that that's really important as well. Not only just like the grit of being like, man, I made this silly decision and now I gotta sleep with a trash bag. It's more of like, wow, somebody out there must be really cold right now, or must be really sweating it out right now, that doesn't have resources. I think that there's less, a little lessons in all the things that you could put towards that.
Well, and I know to qualify for Eagle Scout, there's a because there was a couple within my troop that were on their way. There's a trial you have to go through, and where it's a maybe longer, but I think it's 24 hours. You go off into the woods with absolutely nothing. And if you talk at all, you're disqualified. You can't say a word. And it was specifically to like it, because the talking thing is interesting to me. I mean, it's one thing to like go out there to like put together your own makeshift tent or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the inability to talk, I felt like really spoke to, it's like, no, you have to have a higher degree of discipline and you need to be able to hear nature.
Yeah. And what you're thinking of is Order of the Arrow, which I'm lucky enough to be an arrowman in. Service with Scouts. Yeah. what you're thinking, so going through their ordeal to become an arrowman, you have to, you know, go out there, and it's not only do you not get to talk, you're doing a service project. So you're learning humble service. And like you said, learning that resilience and that appreciation for nature is just so core in that specific program of scouting. And you know, with the Eagle Scout thing, they have to do a whole service project. So like, you know, my son and my daughter are both in the Scouting America program right now, and my oldest is, you know, is 12, like I said, and we're even like looking around, like we were at the zoo last week and saw that by the river boat rides, you know, all of the railings are pretty chipped and dated with the paint, and you know, the landscaping isn't very nice. I was like, hey bud, you know, wouldn't this be a cool Eagle Scout project? And he goes, yeah mom, that would be really cool. He's like, but I know that like I really like Shriners though, and you know, because Shriners helped him in the past. And I was like, yeah, but you know, just something to think about. So like, you know, thinking about these little projects of where he can make his lasting impact and where other Eagle Scouts have made their lasting impact has been really important for him to see the bigger picture along the way.
That's cool. So this organization, which I think we can both agree for as much negative media as it's got, has definitely done ample good. Ignites your passion for nonprofits. And then what's kind of your next role beyond that?
Yeah. So my next role was, I was an executive for the Boy Scouts for a while. And, you know, did the volunteer recruitment, recruited a bunch of kiddos into the program, you know, ran some really cool, camporees and things like that. And really started grant writing, and getting funding that way as well. And, you know, just meeting some really amazing people along the way. But ended up at that point, like I said earlier, you know, they wanted me to use just a set of my skills and not all of my skills. I wanted a bigger picture role. And so I became the director of member and donor relations at the YMCA in Salina. And they gave me that leisure, that reign to be able to use all those skills and to get into strategic planning and to, you know, help them get, you know, 110% of their goal for fundraising. And, it was a really cool moment. And then COVID happened. as we all, hit those metaphorical walls when COVID happened, my family kind of reevaluated their priorities like so many did. And instead of living out in the middle of Kansas, we decided to move to the metro to be closer to family that was aging, and things like that. And I got in with a foundation here that a lot of folks love, and learned the funder side of fundraising. And it was pretty cool to see what what it's like to evaluate, not just from a volunteer perspective, but from a professional's perspective, what goes out the door, and budgeting and things like that. And that was a temporary moment, which was fine. It got me in the door in Kansas City, became a chief development officer. But again, just not cutting my teeth on that big picture that I loved. So around that time, I went out on my own, after working for a for-profit grant writer for a little while. And again, not letting me use all my skills. And so I went out on my own, and it was scary. Sometimes it's still scary. That feast or famine cycle of entrepreneurship is no joke. But it's allowed me to really use all my skills to better nonprofits, to be an advocate for nonprofits and small businesses with both writing and funding. And it also has allowed me to step away and spend the time with my kids and be able to coach Color Guard, which I love so much, which, I do a lot of fundraising and a lot of the funding things, but coaching allows me to come back to kind of that center base, that boots on the ground, making a bigger impact on people's lives. So that it kind of allows me to love on the three things that are important to me.
I love that. So let's talk more about grants specifically, because I feel like whenever you first kind of enter the business space in general and you hear the word grant and you're kind of like, whoa, free money. Where do I get that? And I could be completely wrong, but I specifically remember stepping into a small business development course. I might have talked about this maybe a little bit, maybe not, but that first day was perfect. It was beautiful because I think she got a few questions and it wasn't long before she was like, okay, we've got to clear the air here. Nobody's going to give you money for free for nothing, period. She's like, there's this wild exception right about now where you can get like $5,000 if you submit a very detailed video, blah, 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 for this thing. She's like, but other than that, like there's no, just get the notion of like free money, get it out of your head. So, and I remember even in talking with other folks, it's like if I mention, I met Alex recently, one of the first things that comes to their head is, oh, you should introduce me. Maybe there's a grant available to me. And maybe there is. But I'm trying to narrow down exactly what I'm asking. So here's why I think it is. What are the like key tip-offs to like, we need to be talking to Alex. Like, there's no way there's not a grant for us. How does one know? In the kind of nonprofit growth development cycle and for profit, frankly, that might have some of these available to them. When do you, like an example, there's a lot of the infrastructure being built, like with regards to internet, a decent chunk of that is grant funded to some degree or another. That's how they're getting a lot of the physical lines into the roads to take us from, old school copper DSL to fiber optic that the cities and states have come to like, okay, well, this needs to get done. The average citizen isn't going to be able to spend, $500 a month, what would probably be tenable to make this stuff. So we're going to subsidize it such that it becomes a lower number. And that's something I just know because I'm deep in the industry, but also I'm not big in construction. So there's probably some folks out there screaming at me like, no, not quite, Sam. But the point is that they're out there. How does one kind of even begin to gauge and walk into, is there one available to me? Like, there's not that I'm aware of some public, we're starting to get more of them, but there's not really a public, like, this is where all grants everywhere are posted. And I've seen where there's a real struggle with people that definitely want to give money to support causes that don't get, like, they have the fund and it's there, but they don't get the word out that it's there.
Yeah. And sometimes it's on purpose and sometimes it's not. Yeah, there's a couple of things that you're asking kind of in that question or that tee up. And one thing that I would do is just like explain like what a grant is. And that is funding that is given by a foundation, or it could be by a company. There are corporate foundations to an entity or to a person. There are like arts scholarship or arts grants and things like that out there. But grants that are given to, or funding rather, that's given to an entity to do a certain task. Okay. So it's not just, money, here you go, out the door, goodbye. Often there is reporting involved and goal setting. So when you make an application to a grant, every single grant application is going to ask, if we gave you money, what would you do with that money? And you say, this is what I would do with that money. And that's how you're supposed to spend it if they give it to you. Now, if you don't give it to them, or if you don't do those things that you say you're going to do, you don't achieve all those goals, or, you know, don't perform the way that you're supposed to. Mostly it's if you don't spend it on what you said you were going to spend it on, you will have to give the money back. Now, it's different than a loan in that no matter what, you're going to have to pay that money back. It's, if they're giving you money to fund a music van that's going to help you do concerts in underserved neighborhoods, you're going to spend the money on the van, not on vacation for yourself. And those are the strings. Those are the moments that you agree to with a grant. And something that I would also add in there is making sure that you understand the strings or the outcomes or the goals that you're tying yourself to with a grant. You want to make sure that they're, take this back to old school, business acumen, but using SMART grants or SMART goals, right? SMART goals to set those goals, and making sure that they're attainable and also, not only from the goal perspective, but from the time-bound perspective of the grant. So, all that to say that it's not necessarily money for nothing, but it's money for a purpose. And my other piece of that when you were talking was making sure that people understand that 90% of funders don't have a website out there. This is the world. We live in a tech world now, but 90% of the funders out there don't have a website. Well, how do you find them? There's fantastic tools like Foundation Directory Online, Foundation Search, GrantStation, things like that, that all have search capabilities that you can find 990s, and also free resources like ProPublica that have your 990s for free. And on page 10 of every 990 is the instructions for how to apply to a grant if that foundation is actually accepting grant applications from outside sources. So, that at that point, if you're really going, okay, I want to try to search, but I don't know how to start. And you've tried your free sources like ProPublica, you've tried your free sources like your city websites. Cities will give away funding for things. Your state government, I would be cautious about federal government right now because some of those funds are changing a lot with the current administration. But if you've exhausted those resources in your small business administration offices, then I would definitely look at a professional grant searcher or grant writer to help you create a opportunities list or grants calendar.
Mm. So how is that?
Oh, I forgot. Sorry.
You're my good, brain. Yeah.
It just like popped into my head. The other piece is making sure that people understand that, yes, nonprofits are going to have a larger breadth of grants that they can apply for. They are. But for-profit businesses, it's not unheard of. Oh, there's my cat. It's not unheard of for them to be able to get a grant either, especially, and I mean especially in the late May to August months. You know, the way it works is that Q1 into part of Q2, your large foundations are giving to smaller foundations that are entrepreneur-minded to then turn around and give to small businesses in Q2 and Q3. So that, you know, late May to August timeframe is the timeframe for small businesses to get grants. So if you're a small business out there listening, the time is now. Actually, it was probably a couple months ago to get ready, but it's not unattainable. But have your ear on the ground right now.
Wow. Interesting. Huh. That's cool. Yeah. So tell me about, I want to kind of zero in more on you again now. So tell me about your transition from, you know, I mean, you it sounds like, so you were an executive with the Boy Scouts and you were a chief development officer, if I got that right.
Yep.
For the YMCA, right?
So I was the chief development officer for Emmanuel, a child development center, but okay. I was the membership and donor relations director for the YMCA.
So how was that transition into small business? And if you don't mind, I might start to ask some technicals because I'm trying to understand. But like, yeah. Did you have like a runway lined up? What was your, did you have a business plan? What was that first day like? What was that first, you know, you're on year three. So yeah. I start to visualize what that's like. You're out of the kind of the feast or famine phase, it sounds like. Although if you're anything like me, you still almost kind of have PTSD where it's like, so yep. There's a small shift in the wind. And you're like, oh no, are we going to end up back there? Like, so tell me about that transition, please, while it's kind of fresher in your mind.
Yeah. What was interesting is before I had left my job as chief development officer and other, you know, I like to have myself out and present in the community, whether it's having, you know, a lunch with other, you know, chief development officers or other people in the community, or if it's having a coffee or, you know, going to a workshop, doing this or that. I'm constantly out in the community, just making connections and meeting people, you know, especially up to that point. I think that it's important to build relationships, you know, where you're at, but also, you know, to make sure that you've got your ear to the ground for what's best for your organization. Well, along the way, people had known about me looking to get out and start my own business and to, you know, to grant write and things like that. And like, I guess the inklings of my thought, you know, think my thoughts had gotten back to some CEOs of organizations. And so when it was time that I was like, okay, I'm gonna launch myself next month, I already had people who wanted to be clients on board, which was pretty cool.
That's smart.
So yeah, had folks that wanted to jump in, and wanted me, you know, and the way they usually did it was, you know, I put together a grants calendar for them, that was opportunities, not only by date, but like by priority, by programming, things like that, and a good search list. And then we would work together to pull those opportunities out. And that's, you know, what they would pay me for was for my time each month, to write grants for those opportunities. And yeah, it's just grown from there, which has been really cool. Got into the small business side around month 6, probably. And so not just nonprofits, but the small business area, and just kept going from there. And, you know, I not only do the grant writing side of things, but I also help build cases for support and business plans for small businesses. So that way, you know, some folks that are starting businesses or are new to business, they have like a business plan that's like one page back in front. but this is like a comprehensive one that's like 14 pages that has not only tees up like, you know, your basics of your company, but also all of the things that a grant is going to ask for as well. So that's been exciting. Also doing workshops to teach people how to grant write has been exciting. I have a page and a half checklist or check the box list where people find out just how many documents or what documents need to be in place to be a success in the grant sphere. And usually by the time we're done with that workshop, either they're ready to hire me because they're like, no, thank you, or they're empowered and they're ready to take the next step in their business or their nonprofit, which is exciting as well.
How often do you run that workshop typically?
Typically, I do it quarterly. I am looking to do one during the summertime. So maybe I'll set a date for one and you can put it in the comments or something like that, or I can put it in the comments later on. But yeah, it's about 90 minutes is the workshop. And we go from setting your mission statement and your values and your vision statement all the way to search and finding those grants. So, you know, and using your free sources and your resources. So it's really a comprehensive workshop with layman's terms and how to break down, you know, outcomes versus outputs, what that means, what capital means to funders, because capital to funders is brick and mortar spaces. Capital to just regular people is money. So making sure that there's a translation there for folks that are getting started has been really important as well.
That's huge, because I mean, the values and mission statement just in general, I think for small businesses is something that can sometimes be missed, but also is huge. And it's really, I don't know, at least for my organization, it's kind of been an ever-evolving thing to some end, like just distilling it further and further. And it's like, what does that mean? And what does that mean? And maybe that client or that situation wasn't quite a mesh. What does that mean? And so like our core values, we finally, I think, narrowed it down to something very easy, memorable, and applies to us.
Yeah.
But it definitely didn't start that way. And interestingly enough, I don't, you know, for us, it really just started with almost kind of like a motto. And yep. Then it was like, which was just one quote from Isaac Newton. And then off of that, we just built and built and built and built. And it's fascinating to me how, all things considered, for as much as we've had to change, we've really changed very little. It's just been a build on and a refinement of. That's cool. That's cool. Very impactful. So I feel like we're moving to a place where we could start to wrap up if we wanted to. Mm-hmm. And there's two key questions that I like to really ask and wrap up. And so one of them is, and it comes from our motto. So our motto is if we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Who's been a giant in your life that you would like to pay homage to in this moment?
Oh, there's been so many. In this moment with this conversation, I would probably see my grandmother. She has since passed away, but she was a red coder for the Kansas City Chiefs. That organization is like the philanthropic arm of the Chiefs, and she was huge in it. Did a lot of it from the time I was probably 3 or 4. I was helping out with the Chiefs and doing like Habitat for Humanity projects. And, you know, her passion for nonprofits, I would be remiss if I did not say that she was the giant that I stood my shoulders on to really fall in love with those nonprofits. You know, my experience in the Boy Scouts was important, but she showed me how important it was to put your hands in the dirt and literally and physically help other people.
That's cool. How, if there was one general rule of thumb or guiding light, maybe kind of a pithy saying that you found to be true again and again and again in your life, what would it be?
Pops into my head is always be interviewing. It was advice that my first boss out of college gave me. His name's Ross Munt, if he's listening. I've never forgotten it. He gave it to me my first day on the job when I asked, you know, what should I expect? Because my first day on the job was a conference for 5 days as an executive with the Boy Scouts. And there was going to be like 5 other councils there, 5 other areas there. And I was like, what do I expect? What do I, you know, I've heard there's a bunch of parties there. I've heard there's, you know, what do I do? And he said, whatever happens, always be interviewing because you never know who's listening. You never know who's really in the room. And it's been true from then. It's been true later on. And really, it's been true starting my business. Like we talked about, you know, you never know who's in the room with you and who could be a potential future boss or future coworker.
You know, on that end, a recent I have these eureka seasons, I'll call them. And a recent one for me has been, no one knows who you are until you tell them.
Yep. 100%.
I mean, you could be the king or queen of Wales, right? And if you don't go in there and say that, they're not going to have any clue. The chances are they're not going to have any clue, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a organization that I've worked with that, yeah, I do research. I am a bit of a nerd when I, like, you know, show up and I'm going to work with an organization. I will do my research on them. But until I was in the room with them, and even, you know, when they introduced themselves, it wasn't until later that, like, I realized that they were one of their officers was actually the guitarist in a band that I loved growing up. And I was like, whoa, like, and it didn't really strike me until I was going to their concert. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, I listen to them all the time when I was a teenager. This is crazy. And like being there with my sister and be like, I actually know them and they're like a decent human being. And that's pretty cool. So I think even just seeing people, even after you know who they are, after they've told you who they are, seeing them in action and seeing their actions is something next level too.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for being with me in this moment, Alex. I've really appreciated having you on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I hope it's helpful to the folks that listen in.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.